of what's going on in this field. And before I start, let me point to you some references which helped me a lot when I first started this learning. And those are all written by big names in this field, and surprisingly, they are very readable. So I highly recommend it. If you learn like QFT, these are very nice supplementary materials. So the plan for today is, first I will tell you first and why we are doing duality, and followed by two examples, one in four dimension, one in three dimension. They may look pretty trivial at first, but later on you will find these two pretty trivial dualities really lies in the heart of all the other complicated dualities. So it's really nice to know the spirit of these two. And then I will end with some of the hot topics in this field and what people are interested in right now. Okay, so what is duality? So precise notion of duality is actually pretty different in different fields. But roughly it means when we have two descriptions, but you're lucky that these two totally different descriptions that describe the same physics. For example, in quantum field theory, when we're talking dualities, we are mainly referred to this guy, infrared dualities, which means if you start with two theory in the UV, aka high energy, and you know how to do perturbation theory around this too, but along the IT flow in the low energy, which we are truly interested in, they are describing the same physics. They can be a non-trivial CFT, they can be free theory, they can be topological field theory. So as Puchinsky put it, duality is just when you have some quantum system, you don't yet know how to describe it. It's pretty hard, and you don't have a well-defined notion to describe like all the pictures inside the theory. But you're lucky. You have two classical limits. You can start your research. And why we are doing duality? So the first one is what I just said. You can do calculations only on the only in the high energy regime. It's perturbative. The coupling is small. And this is the part we can do something. But when you actually perform the RG flow, what happens is most of the case, the coupling is very big, and you're entering in a non-perturbative regime. But unfortunately, that is the energy range we are interested in. So when you are doing this RG flow, any unexpected monster can happen. You don't know like what to do with it. If you have this duality that has true classical limits, this may help you. And second one is, so when you are, especially when you are working in the kinetic matter, what you want to do eventually is to describe what kind of phase in the low energy you can find, and all the kind of phase transition between them. So I guess if you learned STEMMAC or QFT, you know conventional phase transition are described by order parameter. And quantum field theory is just treat those order parameter as fluctuating parameter and do perturbation. But recent years, people have discovered so many exotic phase transition that is beyond the land of paradigm. We don't have a general method to describe all of this. Duality might help. Okay. And last one, maybe the ultimate goal for all the high-energy physicists is to give a good definition of QFT. I don't have anything smart to say, but if you are interested, you can check out this talk by Seberg, and also this notes by Puchinsky. So let me just give you the first example, which I guess everyone knows. If you have a Maxwell theory described by Maxwell equation, that's true. And we all know if we replace F with star F, this equation stays the same. This is, of course, very simple because we have a nice symmetry between the electric field and magnetic field, right? If you replace this two, if you swap this two, and everything stays the same. This statement can be made more precise if you are working in the action. So suppose you are given this action, this is Maxwell term, and if you also include the topological term, the theta one, and I add a data function just to enforce the constraint f equals dA. Now, if you replace this data function constraint with this guy, and have an extra integration over d prime, df prime, what you get is if you integrate over dA and df, you can do this for sure, because this is essentially a free theory. What you get is this action. So this one is exactly the same as this, except, I don't know whether you can see it, except you need to replace this coupling g with g prime, and theta with theta prime. The relation between these two is given by this. Suppose you group these two coupling into a complex coupling called tau, and then the thing with prime is related to the thing without prime by this guy. We call this operation S operation. So we often say, OK, Maxwell theory has some S duality. This is what it means. And furthermore, you have a second one called T duality, which send tau to tau plus 1. In terms of theta, it sends theta to theta plus 2 pi. And if you add a 2 pi here, right, and we know this guy is a topological invariant valued in integer for a spin manifold. So what this operation does is simply add a 2 pi I in the action. Because you have an exponential here, this does nothing. So of course, you have an invariant theory after this. Luckily, these two operations doesn't commute. So you can verify that these two operations satisfy these two constraints, and which are the defining equations for this group SL2Z. It's a group of 2x2 matrix with integer entry, and integer, this S, special integer, unit determinant. Okay. So this is an example we all know. And let's move on to a 3D duality that is pretty well known, but you may have heard this for the first time. So often people use this shorthand notation and call it bosonization. It simply states a duality between these two Lagrangians. So on the left-hand side, you have this free fermion. Okay? It's simple. We know everything about it. It's coupled to a background gauge field. Whenever I use uppercase letter, it means background. When I use lowercase, it means dynamical, which means when you do the path integral, you perform the integration over this. Now, on the right-hand side, you have a complex scalar coupled to the scale field. You also include this Chen-Simons term with level 1. That's why I include this subscript 1, little 1 here. Okay? So let me try to convince you why this duality is true. So on the right-hand side, you just calculate the equation of motion. What you get is this electric magnetic field is proportional to the current. Okay? Suppose we take J1, J2 is 0. J0 is data function. It describes a point particle at the origin. Right? Now, if you solve this, what you get is this electric magnetic field is proportional to this data function. The interpretation is very obvious, right? It just means when you have a point particle at the origin, and this Chen-Simons term just attach a flux to this particle. Okay? This is a cartoon. We have a boson described by this field phi, and this, because of this equation of motion, you attach a flux to this, and you get a composite particle. Now, what I need to convince you is just this composite particle is actually behaving like a fermion. Why? You just need to figure out the statistics. So if you move this around the second one, you get a minus sign. That's why it's fermionic, right? Because fermion commute with fermion, but when fermion go around with the flux, it gets a minus sign. This, everything I just said can be made precise by this duality. So if you analyze the monopole operator on the right-hand side, you notice this M. But it's not gauge invariant. It has charge plus 1 under this gauge group B. So I need to attach a boson field to make it a gauge invariant. And this one is a diene operator, and you can figure out the statistics. It's actually a fermionic operator. It's due to this fermion operator on the left-hand side. So you may think, okay, this is pretty trivial as well, because essentially what you are doing is a free theory on the left-hand side, right? Let's try to make something non-trivial out of it. So before that, I need to tell you one technique. It's called SL2Z action on the CFT. So suppose you have a CFT with a U1 global symmetry. What you can do is a set of different operations, and they form a group called SL2Z. There are two basic generators. First one is called S. Simply means if you have a Lagrangian that is a function of a Gibbs field A, you make this Gibbs field dynamical first. You change big A to small a, and then add this term. Simple. And second one is if you have a Lagrangian, you just add this term. And you can try to verify this. This two satisfy this constraint. That is why it generates SL2Z group.
Big A, the T operation there?
Yes.
It's considered background because you don't integrate over it in the path.
Yes. So let's start with the duality I just tell you. Okay? This free fermion due to the Wilson Fisher scalar. Okay? And we perform the same operation on both sides. First one, do the time reversal. What you get is this one with the anomaly, and you just flip the chain summons the sun before the chain summons term, because chain summons term is odd in the time reversal action. Then you do the same operation again. You do T. This is not time reversal. This is T defined by this. You just add a minus term at this. Okay, you get this. But what you find here is this is the same theory. It's free fermion. So these two bosonic theory must be due to each other. Okay, so we obtain this one. We do the same operation again with S. There's nothing completed here. Just do this operation. Just add this term, right? It's very simple. You integrate out A. Again, you can do that because it's linear in this action. It's not interactive. Then you get this action. You just do T again. You obtain this duality. On both sides, you have an interacting theory. It's definitely non-trivial. It's actually very well known in kinetic matter. It's called particle vortex duality. You may have heard of. It's a duality between XY model and Abelian-Higgs model. And it has so many applications in kinetic matter. But it's so amazing that you can do this simple manipulations that relate this non-trivial dualities to the seemingly trivial duality to begin with, right? So, yeah, this is the second example. So I guess after you know this tool, it's you are ready to go, and just you can start reading some references, some nice papers in this field, and to know what's going on. Like I said in the beginning, duality is very powerful in describing the exotic phase transition. So there are two well-known examples that are still very interesting to many physicists. We don't know how to describe them yet. The first example is QED, four-dimensional QCD. It's a theory describing quarks. And we know it's in the high energy, it's free. But in the low energy, it's non-perturbative. And you have confinement, all those kind of beasts you don't know how to describe. But there has been recently development from the duality perspective by this gentleman. And also, there's a very nice talk yesterday. Thin field basically tried to do some simple calculations to this four-dimensional QCD. But what they find from a kinetic matter perspective is that this pretty simple theory actually describes so many exotic phase transitions you don't yet find in like kinetic matter system. So it's actually very interesting. And the second one, it's even more interesting. It's QED in three dimension. So if you have only one flavor matter, it's pretty simple and people have known a lot of duality. But once you have two flavor, it gets dramatically difficult. Why? Because kinetic matter, people trying to tackle this for a long time. It simply describes a very, very exotic phase transition. They call it deconfined critical point. Because it is a highly non-perturbative theory, you don't know how to do that. Last year, these people put out the paper that this theory may actually have a very nice duality relating this one to a different theory. So we know, at least we get a further step. With this example, I basically want to say, okay, there are so many exotic phase transitions that is beyond the Landau paradigm, and sometimes they even have emergent global symmetry. But if you don't know how to deal with that, duality might be a very important tool. The second one is very easy to say, but it's very hard to study it. So if you learn the STMAC or QFT, the first model you learn is a complex scalar. And you know, for the complex scalar, there are two fixed ones. One is free, it's got a Gaussian fixed point. A second one is a Wilson fixed point. There's RG flow connecting these two once you turn on this 5-2-4 coupling. And I tell you, in the beginning, these two are due to each other, right? It's not very hard to imagine there might be a theory here that is due to this guy. Indeed, people have conjectured this theory is called Gross-Naville. It's it's a theory with four fermion interaction. But so far, there has been only study in the large n limit, which is simple. But people don't know what's happening in the small n. So in the remaining 1 minute, let me just tell you this hot topic going on right now. So first one, if you have a supersymmetry, the more supersymmetry you have, the more control you have over your theory, basically. But people have found like if you have only one supersymmetry, that's still very hard. It's easier than the non-supersymmetric one, but it's harder than n equals 2, n equals 4. So maybe starting with n equals 1 is a very good step to make towards the non-supersymmetric theories you want to eventually start it. And suppose, for example, you have a duality. You understand everything about them. But what if you include the boundary? Right? And most likely, the duality is not true anymore. What you need to do is to transform the boundary also. This is what we call the duality between boundary conditions. Once you transform the boundary condition, this whole system is due to each other again. This is very important because it's a way to relate the d-dimensional theory with the d-1 dimensional theory. Okay? So the last point I want to make is so how to prove this duality? There's no way to prove this. But you can try to make some tests. Okay? One of the things people are doing for many years is called anomalies. You calculate anomalies on both sides. And if they match, okay, this is one of the non-trivial tests. And people have conjectures, some kind of generalized global symmetry. You can try to perform this. But maybe there are some other invariants you can calculate that help you to test the duality. So this is the end, and I want to thank you for everyone's attention, and I hope you learned something. Thank you.
Questions? Will the slides be available?
What's that?
Will the slides be available? The slides?
Yeah, sure.
Questions? I have a short one, actually. The way you talked about the dualities was like in a path integral without sources. So I guess if I wanted to take correlation functions, I would put sources.
Yeah.
So what does these dualities, what do they imply about relations between correlation functions and theories?
Well, if I say two theories are the same, they are literally the same. It's a same theory. So whatever operation you want to do to this thing, they have to be the same. Everything the same. The correlations, the operator, or everything have to be matched to each other.
So that would be like a dictionary from operator here to operator.
Yes, and all the correlation function between them.
So if I have an operator here and one an operator there, that would be some non-local in space-time operation?
Could be. It could be.
So in Witten's article on the SO2Z action on conformal field theories, he considered coupling to external abelian vector fields. Well, this is what you're doing, right?
Yes.
But there's also a generalization of that for coupling to stress tensors. And for stress tensor correlators, you also have an SO2Z action.
Okay.
Has anyone looked at what happens with coupling to like arbitrary geometries in this context, in this dualing story? If you can generate any.
Well, is the background fluctuating?
Yeah.
You mean the gravity? There's a gravity.
Yeah, but weakly.
Well, okay, but I don't think people are like, it's essentially quantum gravity. Yeah, people don't know yet how to do it. Yeah.
Hey, let's thank the speaker again.